What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast. Happy Thursday, June 27th. I'm Will Brinson. I'm the host of CBS Sports' daily NFL podcast. Happy as always to have you with us. If you're a new listener, welcome. If you're a longtime listener, thanks for sticking around. Got a great show coming up today. Paul Diener Jr. of The Athletic Cincinnati joining us to talk Bengals. I know we actually talk a fair amount of Bengals on here because John Breach is a super friend. But I really do think the Bengals are the enigma of the NFL this year. No one knows what the hell the Bengals are going to do. And no one really cares, I guess. But the Bengals could be a 9 or 10 win team. No one, like we've done these mailbags before, and like Sean refuses to listen to the idea that the Bengals are a 9-win team. It's totally in the realm of possibility. No one thought the Rams would be good when Sean McVay took over. They thought they were kicking the can down the kicking the can of the road towards 2020 or 2021 with this new stadium. And then they're great. They're in the Super Bowl like already within 2 years. So to assume the Bengals would be bad is idiotic. Now the Bengals might be bad. They could be. And we'll talk to Paul Diener about that in a minute. In the meantime, I got a couple things I would urge you to do. One, if you like gambling, if you like poker, if you like watching poker, you can watch the World Series of Poker on CBS All Access. And you can do that with a free 7-day trial. Don't have to have a promo code or anything. Just go to CBS.com. That's CBS.com, not CBSSports.com. And use the CBS or use the CBS app. CBS app, not the CBS Sports app. And you can go and get a free 7-day trial of CBS All Access. In it, you will find such popular hits as The Twilight Zone, the new ones, and Star Trek, the new ones that you can only exclusively get on CBS. I'm actually making up this read on the fly, so my bosses should be impressed. But in all seriousness, I really recommend CBS All Access. You can watch NFL and CBS games. It's very cheap. If you cut the cord and you don't have CBS All Access, you're a lunatic. Let's get to some news and we'll talk to Paul Diener. One more thing. If you're in the grocery store or the like Walgreens or Wawa or wherever the hell you go to get your, you know, groceries, medicine, pharmacy stuff, whatever it is, hit up that magazine section. There's a CBS Sports and Beckett, like the legendary price guide for baseball cards. If you're my age, you know what Beckett is. If you collected cards, just check the value on those 87 tops every month. They're still down. We teamed up with Beckett as we always do to make a fantasy mag. It is absolutely perfect for you to grab. It's $7.99. It's not cheap. I bought one the other day. I mean, I could definitely get one for free, I think, maybe. But I bought one the other day. I was out shopping at the grocery store to support Jamie Eisenberg, Dave Richard, Heath Cummings. Recommend you do the same. It's got a bunch of good stuff in there. I did a mock draft with those guys. You can learn a lot from it. It's perfect beach or plane travel material for the summer. Go buy one of those when you see it in the grocery store. I think that's it for... I know. Again, with the reviews, I don't want to harp on this. People get mad if I harp on this. But as somebody pointed out in an email to me, gee, Brady Quinn and Prisco bombed badly, but to get 1-star ratings shows you what D-heads people can be. I chucked in 5 5-star ratings. Yeah! And unsubscribed, resubscribed 5 times to help negate that BS to a small degree at least. You don't deserve being crapped on when you aren't even there. Again, if you don't like one show, if you like this podcast as a whole, but don't like one show, then email me at willbrinson@gmail.com or DM me on Twitter at willbrinson. I'll answer them all. I ask anyone. If you could send me, a fantasy trade question in the middle of the year, and I will take time out of my day to send you like 3,000 words back. If you have a keeper question right now and you want it answered, email me or DM me. Don't do it on like a Saturday morning because I'll miss it. It'll fall in the maw of my inbox. But send it to me and I promise I'll get back to you and I'll give you a good answer or at least the best answer I can give. I'm all about engagement on this podcast. I'm happy to do it. So if you don't like the show, if you don't like one show, just shoot me an email and be like, hey, Prisco and Brady suck. And don't leave a 1-star review. You're a podcast listener. What are you doing? You're hurting the podcast. You're part of the family. Why would you do that? So don't do that. Yes. And so, sorry, I'm a little spacey today. So for Thursday show, Paul Diener. Friday show is a lot of news and notes with me. We're pre-recorded. Me and Ryan and Sean, a mini Super Friends edition. John Breach is headed to Paris to watch my team, the U.S. Women's World Cup team, play. And then Monday is going to be a big, giant mailbag, part three. It was kind of popular. People liked it. We really enjoy doing it. So if you got more mailbag questions you want to ask, again, gambling, fantasy, football, life advice, Super Friend Island, boxing, deathmatch questions. We've probably done enough of those already, but if you got a question, like, you got a question like, all right, a Breach sort of weirds me out. What's his favorite color? I don't care. Drop it on iTunes. 5-star review on iTunes with a question guaranteed to be answered. I guarantee you, if you email me or DM me, it'll get answered as well. We have a lot of those coming up. Tuesday of next week, we're going to rank quarterbacks with Danny Cannell. At some point next week, I think on the 4th of July, Heath Cummings and I are going to give our definitive 4th of July beer list and rank wide receivers. And we're going to go through position by position and rank each position top 10, top 10, top 10. And we're releasing a second top 100 on the site. We'll probably get to that at some point. It won't involve Prisco and Brady Quinn. Don't worry. We love both of them, but people weren't real big on the podcast. And, that's sort of the plan for next week. Next week's a big holiday week. I timed this perfectly. Vacation, holiday week. That's how you do it. And then all of a sudden, training camp, we're here and we're rolling along. Of note in the news, Tyreek Hill, we talked about this with Brooke Pryor of the Kansas City Star this week. He met with the NFL for 8 hours. The NFL came to Kansas City and they met from 8:30 a.m. This is per Pro Football Talk's Michael David Smith. They met Lisa Friel and her deputy, Jennifer Garner, started meeting with Tyreek Hill at 8:30 a.m. local time in Kansas City. I think that's Central Time. And then concluded at 4:30 p.m. Central Time. So basically an 8-hour meeting. Having been in disciplinary meetings, you know, of course, as the one who is the narc doing the investigation, as the investigator, checking into the poorly behaved, I feel even more confident in my stance on this. Tyreek Hill is going to be given two options. One, he can take a 10-game suspension and the NFL will suspend him 10 games and he can try to appeal it. It will go poorly for him because of the audio tapes out there. Or two, he can take a six-game suspension and agree to waive his appeal and move along from the matter. Because as Brooke pointed out, they're at this spot where the courts aren't going to solve this by the time week one rolls around. And I get it that it's way more important for the situation involving a small child and the matter of his safety and all that. All of that is way more important. But you have to remember how the NFL will deal with this. The NFL is going to want to make sure that it has some sort of punishment. I think someone at the league office realized we need to have a punishment on the books well in advance of training camp and week one, because people are going to be asking questions of Tyreek Hill, asking questions of us every minute. So they shipped him down there. They hammered out this meeting for 8 hours and they're going to give Tyreek Hill two options. Take a huge suspension and gamble on being able to appeal it, or take a 6-game suspension. You miss 6 games, you're back with the team and you can continue working. And if you do anything else, it's going to get real ugly. So I don't know what to tell you. Like, I could be wrong. I'm wrong all the time. I think that's what's going to happen. I just don't think there's enough evidence there where Tyreek Hill is not going to want to fight the NFL on this. The NFL isn't bound by any, you know, court jurisdiction or anything like that. They can just do what they want. Tyreek Hill is not going to want to fight this in the Supreme Court. That will go, it's not like the Brady situation. And so in my mind, the NFL is probably going to offer him some sort of suspension with a waived appeal that's a little bit shorter than normal, that will make Tyreek Hill feel like he sort of won, that will make the NFL look like it was aggressive enough and it's not the Ray Rice 2-game suspension. I think that's where we're headed. I would be surprised if it went in a different direction. Another question. This is a good one. We're going to answer this again. These are good questions. Like, this is a perfect question. Love the podcast all the way from London. Listen every day on my way home from work and love it. I've also given it 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Questions for all of you. What stadium city with a team is the best overall experience? Been to Tampa, New York, and Austin in the States for the holidays, but want the next trip to include an NFL game and want to know where to go. Fantastic question. I think that it really depends on what you want out of, what do you want out of the trip, right? Because to me, I mean, good luck finding a spot that stinks. I don't think you're going to find a bad spot to go. You know what I'm saying? Like, and then, by the way, this is Joey Hansen. I don't have Joey's, it was via email, so I don't have Joey's, Twitter, but we're welcome to send suggestions to Pick Six Pod. Maybe we'll rank the best spots to go to. I mean, I think New Orleans, if I lived in London and I'd never been to, my wife's never been to New Orleans, I keep telling you, we got to go to New Orleans. New Orleans is the best, most fun city on the planet. Now, the Superdome isn't going to blow you away with the experience. It's an old crappy stadium, but New Orleans is the best city, maybe the best city. Chicago's right there. I would say Chicago and New Orleans, because I think if you're coming from London, you want to see Americana. You don't want to, you know, I mean, Austin is a great spot to go to, of course. Tampa, I could live without Tampa. I think New Orleans, I mean, I'm obviously biased towards Charlotte, but New Orleans and Chicago, I think Kansas City would be up there because you want to go to Kansas City and try this ridiculous food that you can't get anywhere else. Maybe Boston. If you're into that sort of thing, every city where the NFL is pretty awesome. I mean, Los Angeles is pretty cool, right? Seattle would be very cool to go to. That's a really long haul from the UK, but Seattle would be fun to go to. San Francisco would be awesome. The downside of that, of course, is you've got to, you know, hike. Like, if you want to see San Francisco, you got to hike all the way out to Santa Clara for a game. Phoenix, Phoenix is actually really fun. They have the best pizza somehow. But if you're not playing golf, I don't think I'd do Phoenix. I'm trying to run through all the division. Denver. I would say Denver is right up there, right? Cause you can land in Denver. You can see the mountains. You can see like a geography that you would never see in the UK. You could do whatever is going to happen. I'm going to Denver. I'm in Denver right now, actually. I'm leaving for Denver this afternoon for some people. I would say that, Denver is definitely up there. Check out a Broncos game. Incredible atmosphere. It's hard to go wrong, man. Wouldn't go to Oakland. Not right now. Might be a little down. So anyway, tweet us your answers and we'll check in on that in the next mailbag to find out where people think is the best place, the best experience to go check out an NFL game. Minnesota was awesome. I thought Minnesota was fantastic. I thought Atlanta was fantastic for the Super Bowl recently. Just thinking of two cities. I would say New Orleans, Chicago, and Denver are my top three. Just kind of walking through that out loud. I think those are the best spots. I'm sort of rambling here. That's fine. My buddy, Adam Gold, who I appear on the radio with in Raleigh, frequently. He's actually been on this podcast. You may have heard him talking to football. Great dude. Listens to the podcast while he's doing work around his farm in North Raleigh, horse farm. And, he asked me the other day while we were on the air, what is your favorite song of all time? It's another good question. And I've been thinking about it for like 48 hours and I'm having trouble. I'm having horrible trouble narrowing it down. I was blasting a bunch of Talking Heads before listening to this podcast. I would say that if I had to pick a favorite song of all time, and this sort of has me thinking about how we could rework the intro music for this podcast, I would definitely get something that sounded similar to a song from Stop Making Sense. If you've never seen Stop Making Sense, cut this podcast off as long as you're not driving a car and go watch it and listen to it. The DVD's unbelievable. They build up the set as it's going along. I would say the Talking Heads are, I don't know if they're my favorite band of all time. They're right there. They're definitely in my top five, unquestionably in my top five. The whole album is marvelous. Life During Wartime might be my favorite song, but when I think of my favorite song ever, I feel like it's a song I have to listen to all the time. And sometimes you want to be a little more mellow than Life During Wartime. Cross-Eyed and Painless, same thing. Making Flippy Floppy is right up there. I will tell you that, Naive Melody, which this feels like this could be sort of an intro for this podcast, some sort of knockoff version of it. Listen to that at the beginning of this podcast. I would be down for that. So let's create that as the new theme music. Some sort of knockoff of that. Also accepting alternative possible songs. Robert Palmer Sneaking Sally Through the Alley. We're not going to play each one of these. I would get fired for that. Caravan by Van Morrison. The live version, of course, from The Last Waltz. Also from The Last Waltz, Ophelia by the band. And like 12 different songs from Van Morrison's Live in San Francisco. Of course, there are a lot of songs that Widespread Panic and Fish play that I'm also into, but from a classic rock, best song ever standpoint, those are right up there. There's a ton of Steely Dan songs I'd be into. I'm probably missing a bunch, but you know, you get the point. Those, if I had to pick my favorite song, that would be up there. I'd be interested in hearing listeners' favorite song, submissions. So tweet me with your favorite songs. I'm not sure I've mentioned any football in the first half of the show, and that's fine. We got lots of football to talk about. We'll do it with Paul Diener after the break.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
All right, joining the program now, as promised, good friend of the show, second time appearing on this very podcast, which means that I've done the podcast long enough not to get fired. And Paul Diener is good enough of a friend to come on multiple times and talk Bengals with us. Interestingly, though, since we last talked, Paul, you've got a new job. You were with the Cincinnati Inquirer last year, I think, right? And now you're with the Athletic Cincinnati. How's it going? Yeah. The new kicks.
Oh, it's great! It's great. I from afar, while I was at the Inquirer, always loved the Athletic and everything they were doing, and to come over and join Jay Morrison also does the Bengals. So we sort of are double teaming the Bengals coverage here and doing a lot of, I just, you know, I'm going to be loving it here. We've got podcasts coming and all that stuff. So it's a blast, man. I'm enjoying it.
Do you have a promo code for the listeners if they want to subscribe to the Athletic or?
There's an NFL promo code. You can just follow me on Twitter at Paul Diener Jr. And, there's a pinned tweet at the top. And if you want a different code, if that one runs out, I can always, just send one to anybody. We were running like 30%, 40% off. It always is somewhere between $2.50 to $3 a month. depending on what promo code is running. So it's always a good deal there.
Yeah, no, it is a great deal. There's more content, and not like I would tell anybody to watch or read anything other than CBS Sports, but I mean, like,
of course.
I mean, you got, like, surely you've got enough free time, or, like, you know, once the season starts, people have enough time where they can consume more than one website. And I actually don't know if there's enough time to consume everything at The Athletic. Like, it.
No, it's becoming sort of like a YouTube wormhole where you just keep circling and finding something, because there's almost 400 writers and some of the best reporters in the country on this site, and like for every team and that, whether you're in obscure sports and like mainstream sports, every niche, every city, there's people that are just digging stuff up and coming up with interesting stories all the time. It's crazy. You just click one, you end up in another, and next thing you know, you just wasted, like, you know, 5 hours. But you wasted 5 hours reading and making yourself smarter, not just, you know, watching cat videos. Nothing wrong with cat videos or any of the great things that happen in the internet wormhole, but I'm just saying sometimes it's good to read and get smarter from wasting that time.
Well, last night, or like two nights ago, I guess now, because we're publishing this on Thursday, June 27th, but my wife went to walk the dog around the lake near our house, and I was supposed to stay home I was supposed to start cooking dinner. And I went over to my computer to get the recipe pulled up for dinner, and she came back 30 minutes later, and I was like researching DFS golf. She was like, what the F are you doing? I was like, she was like, did you make those Parmesan things in the oven? I was like, oh my God. I was like, I walked over here and sat down to get the recipe, and I don't know what the hell I've been doing for 30 minutes. She was like, what is the matter with you? You're leaving for Colorado? You're leaving for Colorado tomorrow, or today, I guess, as it is. She's like, you freaking a-hole. Get the, you know, but that's the internet for you, man. That's what happens.
This is what happens when you've got a problem, you know? You've got to feed your own beast. There's plenty of people offering nuggets and morsels of information to you no matter where you turn.
Well, all right, let me ask you this. So what changes, what's different about your job? And you can sort of, not specifically like the whole job, but like, so the Bengals announced on Tuesday that Jonah Williams, presumptive starting left tackle, first round pick out of Alabama, a guy that they believed would be a big factor in this season. If anybody doubts that, they're crazy, at a real point of weakness for them. And he's out for the season. What changes about your job with that? Do you write up a newser? How different is it versus the Inquirer and what you were doing? Do you do like a deep dive analysis of what it means for the Bengals season? And B, what does it mean for the Bengals season?
Well, to get me out of the way and talk about what people maybe are more interested in. I mean, for me, it's basically, the like instant newser doesn't happen. I more interact on Twitter, and then I kind of look for a deeper angle, whether, you know, like what I just sort of did a reaction, answering a lot of the questions, that people were having about how this happens and why the Bengals is Paul Brown Stadium on an Indian burial ground, and like all of these things, people wondering what the hell is going on and blaming medical staff and all that stuff. Mm. That never should take someone from Alabama and all that stuff. So I sort of with that, and now I'm doing sort of, I think the Athletic sweet spot is sort of the second wave, real information deep dive, you know, in what really did happen that comes out on the second wave. That's kind of what we focus on, and that's sort of where I'm at with it now. As far as the Bengals, I mean, it's awful. It's they didn't do a lot in the offseason as they normally don't. They're not going to be active in free agency. Their big change to make things different this year obviously came with the coaching staff and the massive overhaul there. You know, they're not a free agent team. So their biggest thing was they want to be like, whether the Rams or, you know, the Shanahan system, running everything based off of this play action offense, you know, and all of it. But that's where it starts, right?
Right.
It's Joe Mixon and running the ball and play action. And they said, we could really do something special here. We got Jonah Williams. You put him at left tackle. You move all 340 pounds of Cordy Glenn inside the guard. Turn him into an inside mauler. Billy Price is in his second season as a first-round pick. You still aren't great on the right side of the line, but you actually significantly improved at guard by bringing in John Miller, who's sort of a run-of-the-mill, just a guy at right guard. But they all previously had a complete disaster at right guard with Alex Redmond. So you've upgraded. You felt like you honestly upgraded Bobby Hart's back at right tackle. He's the same. And that's
I love just how mad Bobby Hart makes Bengals fans. Like, nothing makes Bengals fans more mad than Bobby Hart. And by the way, I told you before the podcast I was going to try and get John Breach, our mutual friend, my colleague right now, on, and he said, I said, hey man, can you pop on with Dino? He's like, I can't tell you how upset I am that I'm going to have to turn down this invite. I'm literally in line to board a flight. He's going to Paris to watch the World Cup. So good for Breach.
Oh,
I know. Rich. Me whining about every Bengals first round pick ever getting injured and Dino talking off the ledge would have been fun. And I'm like, well, that wasn't going to happen.
Yeah. I honestly actually think if you ever really want to have a good time, and if you have any following on Twitter, just pop into my mentions and just start mentioning how bad the Bobby Hart deal was to everybody that's replied to any of my tweets, and you will just see the ugly corners of the Bengals internet will just arrive, and I'll start tweeting awful, office gifts at you and stuff. It's fairly hysterical. But to kind of play that out, even with Bobby Hart coming back, you could definitely make an argument that four of your five offensive line positions were going to be better than last year. That's something, considering that Joe Mixon did lead the AFC in rushing yards last year. And so when you saw that, that was it's Billy Price in the second year and actually healthy this time, but it's mostly the ripple effect of Jonah Williams' arrival, because he was going to be the badass lockdown left tackle that you needed. And that's how he came billed. That's what he was at Alabama, and that's what they were counting on. And Cordy Glenn turning into, some sort of revitalized career. And, like you see a lot of times when you kick left tackles inside, they can be really dominant guards really quick. I think they felt like that's what they had. Right. And now you don't. Now you have Cordy Glenn going back out to left tackle, where he took a step back last year at left tackle. He did. People don't talk enough about that. He did not play really well. It's a reason why they didn't move him to right tackle, where they brought Bobby Hart back. Because if you really look at it, Cordy Glenn was only a touch better than Bobby Hart last year. And people can't believe that. But if you watch 16 games of Bengals football last year, and you even look, whether you go to Pro Football Focus or whoever you're looking at that's doing analysis of that, Cordy Glenn was only slightly better than Bobby Hart. There was a lot of false starts and stuff like that from Bobby Hart. But outside of actual gameplay, they were scarily similar for Bengals fans. So you're back in that boat again, hoping that Cordy Glenn can find himself and that someone can emerge from sort of a battle royal at left guard of people trying to play next to Cordy Glenn. It's devastating. It's devastating and long, everything I just said.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's a great way to put it. And by the way, I was going to ask you about Joe Mixon because mainly, look, I've got the post right here where I wrote about it. And I don't know if I got an actual prediction from you. And June 20th, 2018. So basically a full year between your appearances on here. Thanks for putting up with it. But the title I wrote, Why Joe Mixon Can Be Set Up for a Special Season Behind Bengals Offensive Line. The offensive line wasn't even good, but you were spot on. Joe Mixon had 1,464 yards from scrimmage, averaged 4.9 yards per attempt, and rushed for almost 1,200 yards. You crushed the Joe Mixon call. Is there any chance that Joe Mixon, with this Jonah Williams news, can equal or surpass his numbers? Do you have a higher expectation for Joe Mixon than you did last year? Where do you fall on him? And he's entering his 23-year-old season. I mean, this should be a good year, right?
No, I think Joe Mixon is going to play at his peak level this year, but that doesn't mean that his numbers are going to be better. So the line being the same to me doesn't change from his production last year. I think the offensive system will be better. It's clearly going to be more geared towards running the ball, and everything should be more effective in that matter. But I do think that there is – look, Zach Taylor – just came from Los Angeles where they watched Todd Gurley get run into the ground.
Yep.
And then they want to make sure that Joe Mixon is fresh over the course of a season. And I will argue that Giovanni Bernard was one of the most criminally underused assets in the NFL last year. And they have found no way to get him involved. They never really gave him a chance to do what he does really well. People don't pay enough attention. You know, over the course of guys' careers, there's only a select few that have had any season where they average 4 yards a carry and average 9 yards per reception as a running back. Giovanni Bernard has done that 3 times,
yeah.
And he has still got plenty in the tank because he hasn't been used a ton, and they know that, and I think they feel like he's a real asset to them that can be insert your guy here, Sproles, any of these types of guys that are these sort of maybe more scat backs in certain situations. They want to use him more. They like some of the guys they drafted, Travion Williams out of Texas A&M. You know, that they feel like can come in that third running back role too. To me, you'll see maybe less of Joe Mixon, but just as efficient, if not more, because of, you know, just the way they want to use more of their backs and not try to make Joe Mixon the quote unquote bell cow, which is what they literally called him that last year, which was kind of the part of my prediction on why it would turn out that way. I think there's going to be more shared, but I also think that, you know, it should be pretty solid because they're going to be dedicated to making him a star too. He'll catch more passes. I do think that.
And they just don't have, like you mentioned, they might like Travion Williams and they might want to use, you know, Giovanni more, but I mean, there's only so many touches you can take away. Giovanni had, like, even if you give him 110 carries and, I don't know, I mean, like, you know, 60 targets, like, that's not eating away at Joe Mixon's, the entirety of Joe Mixon's, like, production. Like, he's still going to have production. What, like, generally speaking, though, what the hell is this offense going to look like? Like, what do we expect? I know you mentioned the Rams. What do we expect from Zach Taylor? Because I think, you know, I know we know where he came from. But the Bengals might be the biggest enigma in football just because nobody really knows what Zach Taylor is going to do because we don't have a history of seeing what he's done.
Yeah, no, and certainly for those that never pay attention to him unless something like this happens, which is the vast majority.
That's right.
And which I totally understand. Here's what we do know about Zach Taylor and you know, I've spent a lot of time talking to him about offense and philosophy and his background and stuff. And it is based in the Rams. I mean, what the Rams were doing is going to be the foundation for what you're going to see here. Now, whether that's running the 95% of the time three wide single back stuff that you saw the Rams doing, I think that's dependent on personnel. I think you could see the Bengals run a ton of, I would call it sort of like a big three wides, where instead of John Ross as the third wide receiver, Tyler Eifert would be the third wide receiver,
right.
And it gives you a little bit more options. Obviously, he's incredible in the passing game, but it gives you more options to be a little bit more powerful if you did want to run out of that, which they're all about looking the same every single snap and not knowing what they're doing. So that's the basis of it. It's pre-snap stuff. It's disguises. It's all those jet sweeps, motion things that you've seen all the raids across the league. But at its core, what Zach Taylor is going to be is going to be about running the ball and that deep play action, which is just the core of the Shanahan system that you've seen Kyle running in San Francisco to so much success. And it's a big reason why they drafted Drew Sample in the second round, because he came out as the best run blocking tight end in this draft and also a guy that they think can play pretty well actually in the passing game. And I want to make sure before I even say this statement that I'm not saying that Drew Sample is going to be this, but I'm saying that this is the model for where they think he can be, is the Shanahan system and what George Kittle came out as. When he came out of San Francisco, he was a run blocking, big physical type of tight end who could be schemed open and play really well in the passing game. George Kittle faster than Drew Sample. However, that's the idea, is if you have that as the threat of being a run blocking tight end, you can scheme these guys that have some athletic ability wide open and have huge seasons. So that is sort of the basis, because they saw that as a blind spot where they can't do play action and running the ball properly without that. So that is what this system is going to be all about. You're not going to ask Andy Dalton to drop back and throw it 600 times a season. That's how you lose. That's happened here over and over again. But Andy Dalton, when given a running game and people using him properly and not trying to make him carry the team but make him carry his own part, has had great seasons and can prove it can win you a whole lot of games. This is a guy who's been in the playoffs 5 times. So, you know, I think that's how they view it, and that's why they believed in Dalton. And I think that's kind of the core of what Zach Taylor wants this offense to look like.
Interesting. So that sounds good. Is it going to happen?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that's just it. You also have a guy who's never called plays outside of half an inch from you in Miami. You have an offensive coordinator under him, Brian Callahan, who, I actually think those two are one of the best things that this franchise has going for it, but he's 34 and this is his first time as an offensive coordinator. You have on the defensive side, Lou Anarumo, who has never called plays outside of, go ahead and say it, the half interim year with the Miami Dolphins, which is sort of a common theme here, because the offensive line coach is Jim Turner, very well known for his half year with the Miami Dolphins in 2015, all that stuff.
That's the offensive line coach now this year? The Bullygate guy?
That is correct. Bullygate guy, yeah, who then went to Texas A&M. He's been at Texas A&M the previous 3 years, where he had a brief dust up when he first got there for these ridiculous slides that showed up in like
They didn't hire hurricane or stripper cocaine gate guy, did they?
I believe there's no stripper cocaine gate guy on staff here yet. I'm sure that
this is actually a really interesting coaching staff, because they have James Casey at tight end, Alex Van Pelt at quarterback. I mean, I know that he got fired from Green Bay, but I mean, he was Aaron Rodgers' guy. It's hard to get a grasp on this coaching staff and whether, and like, I don't know if it's hard for you to like step back from your job and to, I mean, you know, like you're working with these guys every day. It's easier to be like, all right, these guys are pretty smart. Cause almost every NFL coach is smart in some way, right? Like, you're not going to meet a guy who's just a complete idiot most of the time.
Most of the time, correct.
Yeah. Although even people are like, Marvin Lewis is a clown. And you're like, well, you could say Marvin Lewis is a clown, but he did, you know, raise the Bengals from the dead and go to the playoffs a bunch. And
I mean, right. You know what I mean? No, like, I'm not saying that Marvin Lewis is a clown or an idiot or anything of that.
I know you're not.
In that respect.
No. But I mean, so do you think that this is a functional offense to operate, or is this a situation where we get into it and it's, so, all right, well, I mean, these guys are in over their head and.
No, I don't. I think it's meant to be easy on the players. I think they have the personnel to do it. You know, the Jonah Williams thing does hurt because we know what it's based around. But, you know, look, I don't know who wants something better when you show up than Joe Mixon, AJ Green, and Tyler Boyd right now. And an offensive line that, you know, again, goes back to Jonah Williams, but an offensive line that did run block for the AFC's leading rusher last year. And people just forget so often that this team was 4-1 and 5-3 with one of the legitimately, like, actually on pace to be the worst defense in the history of basketball. And that was based on this offense and it, with all of these components healthy, playing, winning a ton of games, 35-32 or whatever. They beat the Colts. They beat Atlanta in Atlanta. They had the Steelers beat at home until an absolutely disastrous final series by their defense, where Andy Dalton drove the length of the field in week 6, what would have made them 5-1, scored a touchdown with a minute left, and the defense could not hold them, ran a cover 0 defense with Chris Boswell on the edge of his field goal range, only for Antonio Brown to sneak out and run untouched 40 yards for a touchdown. Carroll Austin got fired. Okay, so that was what was happening on the defensive side of the ball last year. So to the components, to me, when you look at that, because after that, A.J. Green went down for the year, Andy Dalton went down for the year, they're off. They had five of their top six tight ends, and that includes dudes that were on the street, all went out for the year. I mean, they were completely beset by injuries, unlike anything I've ever seen. I mean, the guys, it was completely – at the end of the year last year, it was – I didn't even recognize what was happening out there. You had Jeff Driscoll and some dude named Matt Langle at tight end, and Cody Core was playing receiver, and they had, you know, all these dudes on the offensive line. It was I don't really know what we're supposed to make of that. We're certainly not supposed to judge this offense and these players on those last eight games. Right. I'm not gonna hold Andy Dalton and AJ Green to the Jeff Driscoll, Cody Core level. I mean, that's not fair. So I look at the team and the offense. We were speaking on the offense, and I look at 4-1 and 5-3 and scoring a ton of points. And now you bring in, for the first time in their career, an actual offensive head coach and a young offensive system and a lot of new fresh energy in the building. And I think that you can see how it could work. Does that mean it's going to work? I don't know. Zach Taylor hasn't done anything for me to know that on game day he's not going to collapse into a puddle of his own urine. Maybe he'll be great. No one can claim that they know that. So we'll see. But I do think that there's components there where you could see how it could be very successful.
All right. What about the defense? Because they couldn't hire a defensive coordinator for like 6 months. Yeah. I mean, that's awkward. It's just like they couldn't. Like, how do you, you're like, hey, would you like to be the defensive coordinator for one of the 32 teams in the National Football League? No, really? No? What? I mean, how many times can you get turned down for that job?
Yeah, well, it turned into, it was classic Bengals where it allowed the rest of the league and national media to point and laugh. Mm. And, you know, they had the young head coach who everybody made fun of him for hiring Sean McVay's friend. And it was just, It was classic to fit right into every national narrative. In truth, and it's kind of interesting when you really think about it, and I'm not, you know, Zach Taylor sort of said, I actually thought it was great because I wasn't in like a huge rush, and I could really take my time because there was nobody else that I was worried that I had to hurry up and hire to steal in front of me. So we took our time. We went through different candidates. They actually offered there were only a couple turndowns, but they were Dennis Allen, who they tried to pull from New Orleans, who, good luck. I mean, I don't know that guy's not going to leave that situation. There's no way that's happening. And they offered, obviously, to Todd Grantham in Florida, who was essentially doing what he does best, and that is trying to use his current employer going elsewhere to leverage for more money.
Who amongst us, though, Paul? I mean, who amongst us
has not done this? Yeah, yeah. This is not me throwing stones. This is me pointing out that was probably never realistic. But I think they wanted to try to take a shot. I think they liked some of what he would bring. Instead, he stayed at Florida to be the highest paid coordinator in college football. You know, so as far as who they offered to, that's basically it. And then they went to and assessed who else they had left. And it was Lou Anarumo, who they had worked with before. You know, we'll see. I only say this in slight defense of expectations. You know, maybe they'll be bad. They might. But they really would have a hard time being worse than last year. Like, that defense was so unbelievably awful that, I mean, how could it even be that much worse? It seems almost impossible for that to be the case. You can be bad and still be improved around here.
Yeah, 30th in points allowed. That has to be the lowest in Marvin Lewis's entire tenure as a head coach or defensive coordinator, right? I mean,
to the point that Marvin had to fire his DC and take over as coordinator in the midstream of the season, something that he had not done except for one game in his entire 16 years in Cincinnati. Jeez. I mean, it's clearly he never thought that that was a good idea for something that he would have to do that.
Right.
You know how much back into a corner you have to feel that after 16 years you're like, I guess I got to do this thing I've never wanted to do, even though I'm like supposed to be known as a defensive guru.
How much?
That's how bad it was.
How much do you think it was like? Like, do you think Paul Gunther leaving was that big a deal? I mean, he lost Mike Zimmer before he's lost Paul Gunther. I mean, sometimes there's just a brain drain there. Do you think it was that, or is it like, or just
well,
Marvin?
Yeah, I think Terrell Austin coming in was too much of a changeover than these players were ready for. They were lost, confused, doing things they hadn't done. A roster had been built under the Zimmer Gunther system, which is the same and one that they devised together about, you know, 10, 15 years ago. It's hard press man cover corners. It's the double A gaps. It's these edge rushers and all this. That's what it was built for.
I mean, Zimmer came in. Zimmer was
doing different stuff.
Wasn't Zimmer furious that Paul Gunther wouldn't leave to come be his DC in Minnesota?
Yeah. Paul Gunther was going to be his guy. He was going to go, and Doug Gunther was going to go with him. But, you know, Gunther got the chance to stay in Cincinnati and stay there. And it was, you know, and for the most part, it worked out fairly well. Paul did a pretty good job there.
Paul was under the impression that Marvin Lewis would at some point leave, and he might have a shot at the head coaching job, and then he bolted.
Well, he knew that was his best shot. He knew with Zimmer and Jensen leaving that, and Hugh Jackson leaving as well, you had a chance to be a head coach more so here than anywhere else. And so I think that was probably part of his thinking, and I'm sure there was a lot of money involved, and who knows what all goes into those decisions. But it's weird, like, Terrell Austin hire by Marvin Lewis, I would argue, is what got him fired.
Interesting.
That's what, because the one thing that Marvin Lewis could do that you couldn't argue in his entire second half of his tenure here was hire some coaches.
Yeah.
He was as well connected as anybody. He did. I mean, all the people I just mentioned, Vance Joseph, Hugh Jackson, Mike Zimmer, Jay Gruden, all these guys he hired and immediately became head coaches very soon after because he was so connected within the league. Well, recently, his coordinator hires were absolute undeniable bombs.
Yep.
Ken Zampezi taking over in 2016 set this franchise back a couple of years. And he was basically, there was, as far as I know, he was basically told, we don't think you should do this. He wanted to do it anyway. He ended up having to fire him two games into his second season.
Yep.
The first time a coordinator had ever been fired mid-season in Cincinnati Bengals franchise history.
That's wow.
50 plus years. The next year, the same thing happens. He hires Terrell Austin and has to fire him 8 games into his first season for the second time a coordinator has been fired mid-season in Cincinnati Bengals history. So you end up now, the one thing that you were supposed to be able to do well, one thing that was your calling card, you have now massively flubbed up 2 straight times to the demise of losing your fan base and everything else that happened here in Cincinnati. So to me, that is as much what happened here with Marvin as anything else. Well, if the one thing that you do great, all of a sudden you're not doing great, I really don't know why you're here.
I'm gonna make the case that that Vontaze Burfict running into that tunnel at the end of 2015 is what got Marvin fired. I mean, like, it's almost like everything spiraled out of control. That is interesting. The other thing that I think is kind of interesting, I don't know what you think about this, but, you know, if you look at the 2018 Bengals, right, their expected win loss was 6-10, and they went 6-10. I mean, they met it evenly. There was no luck up or down there. As we pointed out, they're terrible on defense, but a little bit below average on offense. I think that if Hugh Jackson doesn't get fired by the Browns, that the Bengals might have gone 8-8 or 9-7. Cause I don't think the Browns beat them twice if they don't hire Hugh Jackson. And they definitely don't beat them if they've got Hugh Jackson. So I don't know. I don't know if that saves Marvin's job if he goes 8-8. I mean, maybe it does, but hiring Hugh Jackson.
Wait, I can go by his words. Actually, when he was doing AAF broadcast work here this past offseason, he actually said during a game that he was talking about a player that reminded him of Baker Mayfield and said, I shouldn't talk. That guy got me fired. I think he really feels like losing to the Browns twice was a huge reason. How differently did the Bengals feel if they're actually playing? They're sort of in the playoffs talk with that bad roster at the end of the year, going 8-8. You could have sold that to to Mike Brown to keep Marvin around at that point.
They went 1-6 after they hired Hugh Jackson. Hugh Jackson's just a modern miracle of losing. It's incredible.
Yeah, I know. Everybody wants to blame Hugh Jackson. Do I bring up Jeff Driscoll to Cody Core again? Do we need to do
that? No. I know. It's not Hugh Jackson's fault. All right. The Bengals over. We'll get you out of here on this. The Bengals over under win total, I think, is 6. Is that what we said on our podcast before? What do you think? Is that they're, by the way, they're like 185-1 to win the Super Bowl, which is actually not a terrible value.
I actually think, because I'm crazy like this, I love value like that.
Yeah.
Why not? I'm all about flyers, and when you have so many unknowns with a team, why wouldn't you take a chance? The people are now, again, I'm not saying this is what they are, but I'm just saying for comparison, when you're thinking of value and something to throw a flyer on, how about, you know, when Jeff Fisher left, and I've been told by many people that Marvin Lewis is the AFC's Jeff Fisher.
Mm.
I mean, when Jeff Fisher left L.A. and Sean McVay came in, the Rams were a joke. They'd still move. Who's this young kid, right? And be like, oh, maybe they got a talented roster. I don't know. And they took off, right? Now, I'm not saying that that's what's going to happen here, but when you have so many unknowns and you have so many variables and a roster that has some players have proven themselves to play at a pretty high level and make it to postseasons and win division titles before, why wouldn't you get a chance at insane numbers? I wouldn't do it at a regular number, but insane numbers like what are thrown around to them right now seem like something that I would throw a 20 on. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's just like it's easy throwaway money, but if it pays off, it's a good flyer. 6 wins, I would take the over only for the fact that Andy Dalton has never had less than 6 wins, and that includes seasons where he's missed half of them. I mean, that's just – he's not a guy when he's a quarterback that you're going to go 3-13, which is part of the problem here. Eventually, you need that so you can go get another better quarterback. They have at least 6 games. Most seasons have been in the 8-9-10 range. That's just sort of who he has been as a quarterback. So if you're looking to throw stuff down, and traditionally – the biggest turnarounds year to year, all you got to do is look at the previous years most affected by injuries. Look at that bottom 5, and the next year, if they're average health to top health, you will see them probably take one of the biggest jumps in the NFL. The Bengals, by Football Outsiders adjusted games lost,
look at you,
28th. Well, trust me, we spent a lot of time trying to gauge the real injury impact. Ended up 28th last year in the league in AGL. So if you're looking to see where they would be with a jump, you know, I think, well, they would definitely be over 6, assuming they have average health. Of course, they're already on the path to not average health, so who knows?
That's right. Yeah, Jonah, average, they're already below average in that regard. By the way, 14-1 to win the division. They were 30-1 on March 16th, so they've fallen a lot. I mean, that's probably just exposure. 30-1 is a great value to win the division. 14-1 is not terrible. And plus, 7-1 to make the playoffs versus missing the playoffs. So maybe that's, but I agree with you. I think the over 6 wins, I like the over because you just have to be crappy and a little bit less crappy than last year. Like 7-9, you know, you get the over. That's not a hard number to hit.
Yeah.
All right.
It shouldn't be.
Paul Daner Jr., the best guy in the biz on the Bengals beat. Thanks for joining me again, my man. And we'll have to hang out soon.
Anytime. Talk to you later, Will.